The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. You could be anywhere in the world you'd like to be, but today you're here with us. I'm Ben.
Call me Ishmael.
All right.
You see what I'm doing there?
Yeah. It's white, like, call
white,
me Ishmael.
White whale, white rhino.
Uh-huh.
Just, I don't know, just making a connection there. Doing my best. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing pretty well. I am excited for today's episode, Noel. Speaking of rare animals, we are joined, as always, with a very rare and brilliant creature indeed, our super producer, Casey Pegram.
He's like a gilded bird that, you know, you just want to see fly away. And he actually is going to fly away in a good way, spread his wings. And he is going to do that about halfway through this session. He told us not to be concerned when he gets up and has to scoot out to another engagement.
He's very considerate of any possible abandonment issues.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But Noel, you and I have a special guest today. We're not alone in this endeavor, are we?
At least we won't be when Casey abandons us.
So we are joined with a very special guest, a friend of ours, a friend of the show, and host of our own travel podcast, Everywhere. Ridiculous Historians, please welcome Daniel Scheffler.
Hello. Well, let me just tell you, when Casey leaves, I am happy to tell you where he's going. I'm not going to tell you now. I will tell you when he leaves because I know exactly where he's going.
And we maybe even don't. So this will be a surprise for us all.
That's great.
I look forward to it. Daniel, thank you for so much for joining us on the show. Tell us a little bit about Everywhere.
Well, first I have to tell you that you did tell your lovely listeners that they could be anywhere, but really they should be everywhere. Ha ha. See what I did there?
Yes.
Ishmael.
You're absolutely right.
So the show came from this place where I was really frustrated with travel as an industry, promoting it in ways of just being either luxurious or backpacking. And I felt that there was no in between. I also felt that there were just all these endless lists of places to go. Eat here, 5 best bars in Barcelona, 10 best coffee shops in Melbourne. Like, who cares? Google can tell you that. Like, you don't need a seasoned traveler or someone who's dedicated their life to travel to give you that. So I wanted to create a show that was about inspiring people, not what to do, where to go, but really how to be. So Chandler and I, my producer, have gone on this incredible journey of finding destinations that I have memories of, incredible trips I've been on, and turning it into this kind of narrative story followed with interviews with people doing incredible things, high and low. So there's, you know, famous people, but there's also the baggage handler from LaGuardia Airport on my show. So it's come from that place of like, travels for everybody, whether you're going to Disney Springs, or whether you're going to Denmark, it doesn't matter. What matters is how you are when you're doing this. So that's really the kind of essence of the show. And it's been like the greatest joy of my life creating this.
And another thing, you mentioned it being sort of about how to be, and you have a set of commandments that you sort of espouse as sort of like the, I guess, the mission statement of this show. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, you know, I felt that God apparently needed 10, and I just didn't think that 10 would be enough for me. So I rallied up a bunch more. And the commandments are a sort of way of holding the episode in a kind of wink way, absolutely. People think that a commandment is necessarily religious, but in this context, they're not. It's tied to like a little bit of ethics and a little bit of moral imperative. And I want people to take it with a pinch of salt, of course. And you throw it out with your luggage. And I use it as a guideline because it helped enrich my travel life. But they're not in the negative. All my commandments are in the positive. Thou shalt. Like, thou shalt shut the fuck up and learn something. Or thou shalt be generous. And that's been so incredibly beautiful on all my journeys. When I think about these things, sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're heart-wrenching, but it's the way of traveling that opens your mind.
And this is fascinating to me. I personally enjoy the commandment idea, and I love that you hit on the fact that they are all positive. They're all positively framed. They're thou shalts. And I think people see travel as aspirational at times, but if we're being honest, good travel is inspirational, right?
Right.
And in your career as a travel writer, you've been to over 120 countries. Is that correct?
That is correct. I have been doing this for a little while. I started off as a little boy. My parents are big travelers. And I started as a little boy. My first trip that I have a memory of, a clear memory of, was to Mauritius. And I went to an aquarium and lost my favorite teddy bear. And the story in my family and the kind of joke that started from that was, I have been searching for that teddy bear ever since. And 127 countries later, I'm yet to find it. But I have found everything else, including myself. So that's what travel has done for me. I lost something, and I lost, I guess, a part of myself, and in order to find myself.
Poetic. This leads into something that we wanted to speak with you about. Now, for any listeners who are, for some reason, not yet aware of Everywhere, we want to give people a little bit of background. Daniel, you are from South Africa, is that correct?
Well, I like to say that I was born in Africa, bred in Europe, and now choose to live in America. So I was born in South Africa. What's amazing about the name South Africa is that some people don't know where that is. I think it's sort of obvious, but I love to point it out. Mm-hmm. So South Africa, it's in the southern part of Africa, a continent, Africa, the southern part of this continent, Africa. And I was born in the capital, and I grew up sort of more in Europe and also South Africa. And I now live in America, but I have a tenderness for South Africa, as so many people who go. It gets under your skin, whether you're killing animals like Teddy Rosenfeld or whether you're colonizing or whether you're kind of pondering about your place there. It is a very special, special place because it's the beginning of humanity. It started there, whether it's Mrs. Pless or the whatever latest footsteps or bones they found. It all started there. And I think that it's undeniable when you arrive there. And some people behave in this fascinating way, and I guess this is where you find that history so fucking ridiculous is that some people arrive in Africa and all they want to do is protect it and build conservation around it and hold it dear, because that's how they understand the beginning of our life, a beginning of humanity. And then there's the other side of people who go and all they want to do is take it and own it and control it. And it's fascinating.
It's interesting because what we're talking about today is sort of somewhere a combination of the two, right? So Teddy Roosevelt, and his main claim to fame as far as we're concerned as a country largely is that he was the 26th president of the United States, but he was also a well-known outdoorsman and considered himself one of the great conservationists. But the way he chose to exercise this conservation was a little interesting, and we're going to get into that. But he is also the teddy bear, to go full circle here, was named after.
Right. That's correct, Noel. Yes, Teddy Roosevelt has a complicated relationship with animals. He's a fan of the safari. Some of our listeners may not know that the teddy bear that you searched for, that set you off on your journey, Daniel, was likely invented in honor of President Theodore Roosevelt. Back in 1902, Theodore Roosevelt is on a bear hunting trip, going back to what we said, hunting animals, in a place called Onward, Mississippi. And everybody else in his group had success finding and hunting bears, except for our boy, Theo Roosevelt. So his assistants corner a bear, a real bear, a black bear, and they tie it to a tree, and then they summon Teddy Roosevelt to the tree where the bear's tied up, and they say, okay, here you go. We found you a bear. Go ahead and shoot it. And Roosevelt says, no way. That's unsporting. That's not fair. That's not how nature's supposed to work. I'm not going to shoot this bear.
First of all, assistants tied bear to tree?
Mm-hmm.
That is buried the lead there, my friend. These were some burly assistants.
It's 1902, and a black bear, not a grizzly.
Okay, so it was a little baby bear, which is even less sporting, right?
Yes.
So come on. So Teddy was having none of it, so what happened next?
Here's what happens next. So the media of the day loves this story. It spreads like wildfire throughout newspapers of note.
They love the fact that he turned it down, down the opportunity.
Right. It was seen as a noble thing to do. And when people started circulating the story, the president of the United States refuses to shoot this bear. This is great PR, right? There's a political cartoonist who comes into play, a guy named Clifford Berryman. Clifford Berryman reads an article in the paper about Teddy Roosevelt being a class act, or at least not shooting cornered and tied animals. And he makes a cartoon satirizing the president refusing to shoot a bear. That's right. This is an audio podcast, so you'll have to trust us. You'll have to look it up. And it's Teddy Roosevelt in his out in the field hunting gear. And when this cartoon publishes in the Washington Post on November 16th of the same year, 1902, it inspires a guy named Morris Mitchum to make a little bit of coin off this. You see, Morris's wife, Rose, made stuffed animals. He owned a candy shop. She made stuffed animals.
Good combo.
Good, great combo, you know. Peas and carrots right there. And Morris says, you know what, Rose, why don't you make a stuffed bear, a toy bear, and we'll dedicate it to Teddy Roosevelt. And we'll call it, wait for it. Can you guess?
Yeah, I can. But I want you to say it.
A teddy bear.
Nice.
So this piece of history, what's interesting is this one little story ends up becoming this fundamental piece of your origin story, Daniel. And it also leads us to look more closely at Teddy Roosevelt himself, who, as we said, was a complicated figure. You and Noel and I were talking off air about this fascinating story from the Smithsonian that you had sent us. You had hipped us to this, called Teddy Roosevelt's Epic Hunt for a White Rhino.
Right. Isn't that insane? This man who's so known for what he's done for conservation is also in Africa hunting. I guess at the time, those animals were not as extinct or kind of needed to be protected as much as they are now. But he wrote executive orders that he got into trouble for to protect forests and wildlife across America. In fact, some of his executive orders established 150 million acres of reserved forestry. He's a legend. I mean, I have been more interested in Roosevelt than before because I heard Elizabeth Warren, my candidate, talk about how she loves him. That is her favorite president. So I've been reading about him and kind of getting into his thoughts about almost all things. But what I do find fascinating about that piece about the white rhino is he meant well, he didn't know well in some weird way. And that really is the African story. You know, China is kind of moved into Africa and taking land and developing land. And it's amazing what's happening. They're giving people opportunity. But at the same time, they leave and they take all this incredible natural resources with them. So there's a shield and a sword story that's always been the African story. And Teddy Roosevelt represents so much of that.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Even today, you know, when people complain about hunting, there is a certain amount of hunting that actually funds, you know, the purchase of hunting licenses. That money actually goes into wildlife conservation. So it's a very interesting dichotomy. And that's very much the same with Africa. Even today, a lot of the big game hunts go into providing, you know, resources for some of these underserved communities. So it's a little bit interesting to kind of have to reconcile killing a noble creature with potentially saving them or their habitat.
Mm-hmm. And on in Roosevelt's safari, the one involving the white rhino, they also were aiming for what they saw as the greater good, right? The bigger picture. They believed that they weren't out there just for fun, just for shits and giggles.
Right.
They thought they were conducting a safari for the purpose of science.
Which in many ways they weirdly were. So Roosevelt actually, it was the last year of his presidency. He was a lame duck president in 1909, and he was really hot to get out to Africa and do a safari. So he floated this idea to a guy named Charles Doolittle Wolcott.
Love the name.
It's a great, great name, who was in charge of the Smithsonian's Natural History Museum. And they didn't at the time have a particularly robust collection of like taxidermied wildlife, which is very much a thing. And it remains very much a thing today. Mm-hmm. You know, the Field Museum in Chicago, for example,
sure.
At the time, 1909, they were regularly sending out expeditions to these parts of the world to kill and stuff these creatures and put them up in display. There's even I can't remember where I saw it, but there are certain natural history museums that have like these libraries almost mm-hmm. that are cataloged carcasses of different birds that are taxidermied and stuff. They're not put on display, but you can open up a drawer and then there's like this bird carcass in there, and they're cataloged like library books. It's very strange, but this is absolutely a thing. And Teddy Roosevelt says, "All right, Walcott, you guys are kind of like, you know, asleep at the wheel here when it comes to getting an awesome collection of these creatures that I personally believe are going to be gone soon," mm-hmm. which is like another weird dichotomous thing, which we'll get into. He knew that they were going to be gone, and yet he was still totally okay with contributing to that by killing hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And Walcott says, cool, because not only is this an amazing opportunity for him to get some specimens— what a PR coup, right? I mean, this is like literally the most famous type of person that could provide these specimens to him. So they'll have like an extra added value, right, Ben?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so Theodore Roosevelt, we have some of the correspondence that he wrote to Charles Doolittle Walcott. And just a quick excerpt here, I think, gives us the lay of the land. Roosevelt says, "As you know, I am not in the least a game butcher. I do like a certain amount of hunting, but my real and main interest is the interest of a faunal naturalist." Faunal, F-A-U-N-A-L, flora, fauna. And then he says, "Now, it seems to me that this opens up the best chance for the National Museum to get a fine collection, not only of the big game beast, but of the smaller animals and birds of Africa. And, looking at it dispassionately, it seems to me that the chance ought not to be neglected." And then he goes on and explains that he plans to publish a book, and then he will use the proceeds from the book to pay for a safari that he and his son Kermit Roosevelt— this episode is full of amazing names.
Love them all.
That he and his son will take. They're going to take this safari to Africa, to the African continent, and they are going to attempt to capture as much big game. Again, ostensibly, the way he's phrasing it is not for some thrill of a hunt, but is for the education of the masses, right? The greater good. And this Daniel, I would defer to you. You know, here in the States, when kids grow up in the U.S., you only hear about hunting in terms of like hunting deer or something, right? You don't really in this country hear about safaris or these big game expeditions. And I'm just curious, when people who have never been on a safari or even been to the continent of Africa, when we see depictions of big game hunts in fiction or safaris, you know, in films and stuff, is that in any way accurate? Is this a thing that still happens? Was it something that just happened, you know, in days of yore?
No. In fact, the Trump children often go to Africa to hunt animals. So it is still happening. In fact, recently a lion trophy was approved for import into the U.S., and these things are still happening because tourist operators somehow manage to get around the rules. There are, of course, incredible countries like Botswana where it's outlawed and not allowed. But it is happening. People like to kill. It's part of our very humanity, is it not?
Hmm.
We establish ourselves on this planet in a way that we have to kill to survive. So why would we be changing? You know, we evolve, but perhaps we don't fully evolve past these things. So I think there is still a fun factor for some people, but it is a real problem. I think that Africa hasn't dealt with this particularly well, because where there's money, anything can be bought, and even nature. And I recently interviewed the CEO of Conservation International, and their quest is to look at conservation in new ways and to open up conversations. And next week is Climate Week in New York, and I think it's important that we do look at what's the real important issue for all of us. So the question really is nature important to you? Like, is it truly important to you? And I don't think we have a unanimous thought process on that. Because to some people, they're ready to go live on Mars. Elon Musk is fixing that for us. And for other people, this is the one life I get. I could live it up. who cares? So I wonder, if nature is truly important to you, and as someone who's from Africa, I grew up looking at this stuff more critically because I was aware of it because my parents are big safari goers, as if my husband would tell you that they're on safari all the time. If you need to speak to Daniel's parents, they'll be on safari. and part of that is conservation awareness. My parents really take that very seriously, and so do I. And I think places like Singita in Tanzania and in Zimbabwe and South Africa and now in Rwanda are really, really taking the safari experience to a next level. So not only is it not the proverbial out of Africa Meryl Streep experience, it is also one where by going, you are contributing to having 900 full-time anti-poachers on the reserve. If you buy a villa at Singita in Tanzania, you are obligated to pay a monthly or yearly fee in order to contribute to anti-poaching. And I think that that's spectacular, and more places should be doing this. I've also been on safari in India, and it's a very different thing. They have much more respect for the animals. I went to parts of Rajasthan where the leopard live open and free next to villages, and oh, wow, they've never had any issues. The leopard just walks right up to you and would never do anything because people would never kill them and they would never kill people. And that's very different in Africa. There's the relationship has, it's gone back so much to hunter-gatherer and then to Teddy Roosevelt days and now to the Trump Jr. days of hunting.
And when we go back and look at Roosevelt's hunting in Africa, Roosevelt and Kermit, I'm just looking for excuses to say Kermit. Thank you. When we look at this, we see that regardless of his stated aims, Roosevelt did kill a lot of animals.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it goes back to, we talked about with Jack and Miles from the Daily Zeitgeist on an episode we did about weird flexes, weird historical flexes. Mm-hmm. The fact that Charles Darwin, again, known in history, thought of as one of the great naturalists, not really so much conservationist, but even I find those terms interchangeable, at least in my mind, that whether that may or may not be the case. Charles Darwin would, like, eat every animal that he cataloged.
One of each. One not of every each. Single.
Yeah, but he ate a lot of, like, endangered, like, turtles and stuff. Like, yeah. I mean, he definitely probably single-handedly contributed to some of the species that he was studying becoming endangered.
Sure, yeah.
Because he ate so many of them. So that's the thing here with Teddy, right? He, you know, has a ball on this safari. He, again, like, he's so preoccupied with this at the end of his presidency that he admittedly can't focus on anything other than this. He's, you know, gathering weapons and ammunition and having maps charted and all this. And all he needs from Walcott, the big ask that he's expecting from Walcott, is to supply some personnel who can actually stuff these creatures on demand.
In the field. Field
taxidermist and naturalists who, because his job isn't to catalog. I mean, he maybe catalogs the species that he kills for his personal little journal entry, which we'll read you in a little bit. It's fascinating. But he has to have professionals from the museum to actually do the real scientific work. And he agrees because Walcott knows this is a deal and a half and it's not really costing him much because I believe Teddy Roosevelt financed his own trip with his own money, and then because again he knew he was going to get paid back when he published this book, which he did. So the safari is a huge success in that he killed somewhere in the neighborhood of 512 animals.
Personally, 296.
That's right. Between he and his son, and there is actually a fantastic article on Vox that has a page out of the book that he published in 1910, 1 year later, called "African Game Trails: An Account of the African Wanderings of an American Hunter Naturalist." That he lets himself. He coined his own like little category. He's not a hunter-gatherer. He's a hunter-naturalist. And it's the headline is List of Game Shot with the Rifle. during the trip. So we've got, and it's like, it literally looks like a scorecard in like darts or something like
and
that.
And it's divided by him and his son.
Yeah,
right?
We've got TR on the left and KR, our boy Kermie, mm-hmm. on the right. And let's just go through them together for a minute. We got lion, leopard, cheetah, hyena, elephant, square-mouthed rhinoceros, hook-lipped rhinoceros.
There's the common zebra, the big zebra, of course, giraffe, the bongo, the bush buck.
I'm sorry, the bongo?
Yes, the bongo. Teddy himself didn't shoot any, but his son Kermit killed two.
He got two of them. The giant eland? Mm. I don't know a lot of these animals, Ben.
Yeah, I've got to say, you know, not being a faunal naturalist by profession myself, there are a couple of deep cuts on here that are new to me. And, you know, it's so tough to try to ascribe motive or personal motivation to historical figures. You know, we know only what was said about them at the time, only what research proves, and only what they wrote, right? Their own records. So it's, this is just me speaking personally, it's tough. To your point, Daniel, about the idea of killing for fun, that human impulse, it's tough for me to figure out how much of his scientific interest was true and valid versus how much of it was sort of a facade to rationalize this vast amount of death.
I mean, his rhetoric is pretty consistent.
Yeah.
I mean, he says here, quoted in this Mental Floss article from the book, Kermit and I kept about a dozen trophies for ourselves. Otherwise, we shot nothing that was not used either as a museum specimen or for meat. This is an interesting line here. The mere size of the bag indicates little as to a man's prowess as a hunter and almost nothing as to the interest or value of his achievement. So, I mean, he thought pretty highly of himself and the value of this achievement and this expedition, you know?
And it is true that the Smithsonian at the time didn't have the most impressive collection of fauna from the African continent. I believe they sent someone to explore Kilimanjaro in 1891, and they sent somebody else to the eastern Congo, but those expeditions produced relatively few specimens comparison to other museums.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
At this point, Walcott, of course, is on board, but we have to remember, there's a point you raised earlier, Daniel, regarding resource extraction, the idea of taking from a place. No one had the conversation at the Smithsonian, in the halls of the Roosevelt residence. No one said, hey, should we be taking these animals like, should we be taking these animals, stuffing their carcasses, and transporting them across an ocean? No, nobody said, what does that mean for the people who live there? You know, and that seems like a problem that continues today.
I think it's a big problem, and I don't really know the exact solution. I do feel like there are some progressive countries around the world, like Costa Rica, that are really focused on ecotourism and bringing awareness to this, and obviously places like Bhutan. But they're small countries, and I think a lot of this is much easier because of the size. I think these things are more challenging in places like China and Russia and, of course, America. And there's not a lot of value put on this in this moment in our current political life in the world. Other things are kind of more important. So I wonder, like, what could be done? I mean, I think legislation is important, but I think it's the private sector. It's big tech that has to solve this, and whether it's Elon Musk or his brother Kimball Musk or perhaps Conservation International. But those are the kind of voices that's really necessary, because governments will come and change and evolve, and they're so slow moving. But the UN is caught up in a lot of bureaucracy. But I think that these big tech companies could actually make a difference. So maybe it's a call to them to be like, let's start our own tech app. Let's call it Teddy Free. Free Teddy. And we start a conservation awareness campaign. What do you think?
I'm all for it.
I'm on board. Yeah, I like the idea of Free Teddy. Do we get to count as co-founders? We just want to be in the pictures, man.
Right. I think you are. You just co-founded it with me. So
it's as easy
as
that.
We're starting this campaign.
I love it. This is great.
There's one last thing that we say. Now, of course, Teddy Roosevelt went on to have many adventures. And somewhere in this wide world of ours, Daniel Scheffler's teddy bear is having adventures all its own. And we hope that one day you two will finally be reunited.
It makes me think of that part in Amelie where the gnome, you know, goes everywhere and takes pictures, and she sends the pictures to people. Maybe one day you'll start getting anonymous pictures in the mail from your teddy bear having adventures. That would be creepy and heartwarming at the same time somehow.
Oh, I love that. That's so beautiful. I really hope that teddy is still living on somewhere beautiful, because I have a very, very dear friend, and she has a teddy bear called Little, and he travels with her everywhere. He's always in her bag, and Little has a friend, her wife's teddy bear, called Moyen. In fact, at the moment, they are fighting, but I always spend a lot of time. There's hundreds of photos with me and Little and Moyen all over the world. So I guess I'm vicariously living my life with my old teddy through the new teddy bears.
Because history may not repeat, but it certainly rhymes.
It sure does.
Right. Well, I have been thinking, you know, now I'm on a Teddy Roosevelt kick. And this week at the Met in New York, they commissioned these incredible, incredible statues by a Kenyan-American artist. And she has done these female sculptures, and she's put them in the Metropolitan Museum of Art's alcoves. There are four of them, and they are these sort of powerful women. African queens looking out onto the world. They call it The New Ones Will Free Us. And it's part of the Met's sort of shift in their commissioning, and the Natural History Museum's shift in how they're re-examining statues, in particular the Teddy Roosevelt statue, which some people think should be torn down because some people have called Roosevelt racist towards African Americans and Native Americans. And it's a fascinating thing, because I think it was a different time, right? Like, do we think of racism in the same way then as we do now? Probably not.
And he was a very complicated figure, of course. You know, one thing we learn about history is that people are very rarely 100% heroic or 100% villainous. Roosevelt himself has some inherent contradictions. We know because he wrote these contradictory statements. He said that game butchery is as objectionable as any other form of wanton cruelty or barbarity. But then he also later wrote that creeping after game made our veins thrill, and he praises elephant poachers, saying, "Few careers are more adventurous or more fraught with peril. If you are keeping score of the animals at home, Roosevelt killed 8 elephants."
Yeah, and we sort of teased at the top of the show the idea of a white whale kind of situation, like a Moby Dick, like he was in search of this creature that he had yet to bag, and that was the white rhinoceros, which is a very specific species that's much different from the very common black rhino that he had been collecting for some time. And it's not even the color that has to do with their difference. They're actually in different genera, so they are very wildly different. The white rhino comes from the Afrikaans word wide, W-Y-D, which means literally wide. So the name white doesn't even refer to, it's sort of a bastardization, an English bastardization of that Afrikaans word. And he did ultimately get several of these, and they are currently on display in the Natural History Museum, the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., and they are called the Roosevelt rhinos.
Well, do you know how to tell the difference between a black rhino and a white rhino?
No.
No, how?
So what's funny is the major difference is the shape of their mouths. Black rhinos developed a pointy lip, which they use to pick up fruit and select leaves from twigs. And white rhinos have a flat, wide lip, as you said, wide, to graze on grass. So that's how you tell the difference whilst you're on safari. Then you don't kill them. You just look at their lips.
Exactly.
That sounds like a plan, especially considering now we have to wonder what would have happened if Roosevelt had not bagged those Roosevelt rhinos. Today, the northern white rhino is extinct in the wild, and I think there are only a handful left alive. What, 2 or 3 now? So we end today's story with a look at Teddy Roosevelt that may be surprising to some of our fellow listeners. He would call it an adventure. This expedition of his is something that many people don't learn about today, and that's a shame. Daniel, we want to thank you so much for joining us today, and for anyone who yearns to travel a little bit further from their comfort zone, geographically speaking, for people who want to join you on your adventures as you literally travel everywhere, where can they find the podcast and where can they learn more about you?
Well, it's definitely on the iHeartRadio app, but also anywhere you get your podcasts. We're at Everywhere Podcast on Instagram, but I'm not a social media guy much, so I'm more like, listen to the show, take it, don't see it as head knowledge, see it as heart knowledge, and I'll see you everywhere.
Love it. Thank you so much, Daniel. If you want to find us on the social medias, you can find us at Ridiculous History on Instagram. If you want to join our community on Facebook, we are the Ridiculous Historians, where you can connect up with your fellow listeners and exchange memes and conversation. And Ben and I even creep in there from time to time and get in on the fun. If you'd like to follow us individually, I am at HowNowNoelBrown on Instagram.
You can see me get kicked into and kicked out of various countries, locales, and locations on Instagram, where I am at Ben Bolin in a burst of creativity. I'm at Ben Bolin HSW on Twitter. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Casey Pegram, who, by the way, stayed the whole time.
He made it.
I don't think that was for us. I think it was staying for you, Daniel.
He just didn't want you to know where he was going because I was going to reveal. I should still do it.
Well, you can.
I should still tell you.
Feel free.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
He's going to France.
Ah, he always does. Ah, we knew it. We
he's
knew
always
it.
Going to
he's
France.
Always bopping off to France. And alas, he's usually on mic on the show today, but we're having... Are you on mic on the show today, Casey?
I'm on the weird mic.
Okay,
so probably sounds
it,
weird,
might, it might sound funky. We'll see. He may or may not actually be in the show because we've got some mic issues in this new studio. But
LaBouche will return.
LaBouche will indeed return. Huge thanks to Casey Pegram for sticking around. Big thanks to you, Daniel, for being on the show with us. Thanks to our...
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our theme. Thanks to Research Associate Gabe Luzier.
And thanks to Research Associate Ryan Barish. Thanks to the Quizster for not dropping in at the end of this episode. I
always love it when he doesn't drop in.
And thanks, of course, to Christopher Hasiotis. Thanks with some caveats and asterisks to Theodore Roosevelt. And hey, Noel. Thanks to you, man. I like your shirt today.
Hey, appreciate it, bud. Like your shirt, too, and the cut of your jib. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.